Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And welcome to the Red Men TV. It's the final word show after Liverpool drew the Community Shield and lost on penalties. I am joined by the James Sutton, the man, the legend, as Paul normally says. One Sam Walker. Is it still one Sam Walker?
One SGW now, Jay. I mixed it up.
Okay, and RossiC89 on Twitter, or just our Rossi. Lads, thanks very much for coming in. We're going to start off with the national anthem chat. I think, you know, it's blown up big time, hasn't it? Sam, I'm going to come to you first on this one, mate, because James said some pretty tasty stuff off camera. I want to say that. Sam, You were down at the Community Shield yesterday, yeah, but I think you missed it. You missed that, didn't you?
Yeah, we broke down. Our bus broke down, so luckily we got a second one. That's a long story, but we got there at 8 minutes past at three, so we're just in time for Sani to get injured. We'll get into that in a minute. But I didn't actually hear about the booing until after the game, and I saw all the videos, and I'm a bit devastated that I missed it, to be honest, because I could have added some lung power to that. just saying.
Was it really loud?
It was so loud. I was lucky enough to be pitch side for it, and I couldn't hear myself think. Really? You know, it was definitely loud. Like, what was dead interesting is where the players were all lined up, weren't they, for it? And I was stood in front of the players, and they were all like they were noticing, they were uncomfortable. Like, oh God, this is really awkward. Yeah. Especially like Hendo, who's captained England, and like Trent, who probably wants a long career at right back for England, who's also a Scouser, and he's like,
was anyone puffing the chest out?
I can't remember exactly. There was one person who was sort of bottom lip in the words, maybe a little bit. Like, it's pretty impressive. Like, we might have it on camera. I'll see if I can dig it out later in the week or something. But Ross, you've seen the fume. Where do you sit on it? Without Nick and James's point,
I understand it, and it's always going to cause problems because people who aren't from around here don't associate the national anthem with what it stands for. So people from Liverpool will never understand it, and they won't get it, and it'll always be a divide. You know, I think Henry Winter tweeted up, Liverpool booed Sterling, City booed You'll Never Walk Alone, Liverpool booed national anthem, football's back. And it's just one of those cultural things that happens, and it's Liverpool fans kind of standing up for something. And I said that it won't get understood across the board. It might be disrespectful to some people, but, you know, something's always offensive to someone, isn't it? And it's just them taking a stand for what they believe in.
James, voice of reason. I'll give you my opinion first. I wasn't bothered at all. In fact, I was joining in. I enjoyed it, like, you know what I mean? And I probably booed for half of it, then heard a little bit of a Liverpool song and joined in with it. The fallout's been massive, but I think, you know, we were talking off camera before, and I can freely admit that you're right on this one, and I'm blatantly wrong, because I think, go on, you tell the viewers.
Well, no, I mean, I agree with what you're saying about it. I think if you're not from Liverpool, and if you're not a Liverpool fan, it looks bad. Like, you know, there's this country right now is a fucking car crash. Mm. And people are clinging on desperately to things like the royal family, the national anthem. This country is the identity of this country is completely fractured. So for a lot of people in this country to hear a fan base booing something they are clinging on to, their national pride, I can completely see why people are in uproar about it. What I will say is, We've booed or sung over this national anthem for years. Yeah. We've never had any kind of, we've never felt any loyalty to this song. So it, people shouldn't be surprised by that. What I would say, and what I said off camera, we should just sing over it. Booing it invites vitriol, and it invites people. Like, I mean, fucking John Cross at the Mirror writing something on Twitter saying, "Oh, they booed the national anthem in front of Prince William." Fuck, what?
Yeah, I saw that as well.
What
yeah,
are you
I
on was about? Like... What's it matter in front of Prince William? It's not his.
Probably going to see it on the telly anyway.
Do you know what I mean? We're not. You know, directly insulting his mum. It's just, it's our view on a song that represents the country that has done no favours for this city. But far better, from my point of view, to sing over it. We've got much better songs than God Save the Queen. You know, we've got plenty of songs to choose from. We could have sung over it. That would be, for me, a much better way of showing our kind of disdain for it.
I think that's the grown-up thing to think. I think that's probably the right thing as well. And, you know, listen, I mean, my brother texted me this morning and said, why were you booing the national anthem, right? And I thought to myself, well, listen, you know, he's an Everton fan, but he should understand why. I'm surprised that he's asked me this. But it turned out he was setting me up, because that's what brothers do to each other. So I said, the reason it goes back to Thatcher, it goes back to...
What's the establishment?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and the Hillsborough cover-up, and it's all this. And for me, it was also about Boris Johnson yesterday. Yeah. And it was about him not retracting his statements that he made years ago about us being a self-pity city and all that type of stuff. So that added to it for me. And I can't talk for thousands of people around the ground. I can only talk for myself on this. And he went, and my brother texted back and went, there's a Liverpool fan just texted in and said this because Virgil van Dijk got booed during the Nations League.
For pity's sake.
Right, and I'm like, Liverpool fan on TalkSport. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm disappointed that he listens to TalkSport, and B, disappointed that he'd even think that was possibly the reason. But Sam, it's not. It goes back much further. Yeah. And as James says, we've done it for years.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because I'm in a WhatsApp group with a load of mates from all over the country, West Ham fans, Arsenal fans, etc. Just we've come together,
that
union
must get
stuff
spicy.
Like that. It does. People leave the group very frequently. Come back. Honestly, it's mad.
Sam has left the group.
Yeah. Luckily, not very often these days, eh? but like, honestly, I had to educate a few of them this morning. Like, my mate Ed, who's West Ham fan, I had to educate him. He's a nice lad. I had to say, look, mate, you don't understand, but there's actually a lot more intelligence in the boo than it comes across. There's far more to it. People are booing for an intellectual reason. It's support of depth of history and all kinds of stuff going on, like you've alluded to. But it just comes across, like, I can completely agree, like Chris says, we are like wrong in a way, because the boo just doesn't represent what we're actually trying to do. We're trying to stand up for ourselves, aren't we?
Which is why I say far better to sing.
Even just singing Liverpool, the city would have been the perfect way to go
ideal.
Through it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But the blowout, I mean, Ross, you're on social media much more than me. Like, it's everywhere. It's all people are talking about.
Yeah, I think like James said, it doesn't help when there's people that are role models of, you know, journos and stuff that are kind of peddling it as well, and they should know better as well, because they should research the history, they should know where it comes from and stuff. But I think it's, like you said, even not from around it, like, you know, your mates and stuff, people don't understand it, but they should do by now, because like the coverage has been like everywhere, you know. It's common knowledge what happened, and like you said, the cover-ups and the Thatcherism and stuff like that before, and why people don't like it. I'm not booing for the sake of doing it, are they? It's just, they said it's standing up for what you believe in.
I hate, like, one of my big things over Twitter over the last few months, I've heard loads of people mention this word, and it's probably a made-up word, but that whataboutery, you know what I mean? And like, so, well, what about this and what about that? And we saw a lot of that last night on Twitter, in that James, you know, the Liverpool fans booing the national anthem, they're fucking pricks, they're rats, they're bin dippers, they're scum. And you're like, and this is what the country literally thinks about. It's not a Man United fan, it's not a City fan, it's fans of every team from up and down the length and breadth of this country calling us the same things that they've always called us, and they wonder why we don't feel a part of it.
They don't understand irony, do they? I mean, I can't add anything to what you've just said. You've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. It is absolutely that sense of them and us, and it is perpetuated by... Yes, it's perpetuated by journalists who should know better, but also by fans of other clubs who, instead of going, actually, let's have a think about why they might be doing this, why they might have such a problem with the establishment. It's far easier to get on social media, like you say, and just go fucking bin dipper or whatever. It's, you know, that's football Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah, so we'll talk about the game in a little bit. One other thing, Sam, I wanted to talk about, you'll probably have seen it, the Liverpool and Man City fans clashing on the tube. Doesn't look great, does it, for a friendly?
It's unfortunately, this is like, and I hate to say this because I hate all that, but this is kind of what it's, I reckon it's going to be like for the next couple of years in Liverpool and City. Because when you get two clubs that are at each other's throats football-wise, fans are giving each other banter, managers are poking, there's that rivalry. Like United, it's almost like when United and Arsenal came together in the early 2000s. Because you were both so good at football, you will get the idiots of both sides fighting. It's just, I looked at that, we were on the bus back, it was working by then, and we were on the bus back and it was just like, what are they doing? You know, what? It's exactly, we just look like idiots, don't we?
It was old people as well, that was the thing.
Yeah, it was all middle-aged fellas. Yeah.
The best part was, though, watch the video again, there's two girls sat on the tube and the camera pans, they just sat there getting on with the business. Like, it's like, we see this all the time. Honestly, they're just getting on with it, like, whatever, like, you just can have a fight all you want.
It's mad, though, like, but, you know, I don't go to the footy for that, and, like, I'm not wired that way, I've never been a fighter anyway, I can't throw a punch, it doesn't help, you know what I mean? But I would never think to myself, I'm going and going to go and pick a fight with somebody and stuff. It baffles me. I go to the footy for fun, and, like, fighting people in a tube and putting your life at risk and all that. We see so much in the news about, like, these one punches that knock people out. Someone I used to go to school with got killed because he got punched in town and he landed on a curb, you know, and he died because of it. And it's baffling to me, Ross. I just don't understand why people do it.
No, and it's the same thing again. It's kind of a cultural thing with football. Obviously, you know, 80s, 90s hooliganism stuff. You kind of want to put all that to bed. And there was, what, 60, 70,000 people there yesterday. But that'll get highlighted and that'll get used against football fans are going, that's what they're all like, and it's not, it's a minority, but it happens far too often still. And like you said, I don't know, it's policing, it's people going out, it's 3 o'clock kickoff, people on the piss, having too much to drink, and then, you know, tensions rise, don't they, when you win stuff, and it's just idiots that are ruining it for everyone else. So you don't have that, who aren't wired that way, like you said.
It feels like it's become more apparent in the past, sort of. I might be wrong, it might have always been there and I just was kind of ignorant to it. But certainly, I feel like we've seen more high-profile examples of fan violence.
So everyone's got a phone, haven't they?
That's the problem, isn't it? Everyone just videos
it. It's to do with social media, it's to do with everyone having a phone. But it's to do with the fact that there's a lot of very disenfranchised, very angry young people out there who are looking for an excuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to, you know, to turn this show into something it's not, but we need to start as a, you know, as a government, as a country, as a, you know, the FA, everyone, we need to start looking at why this is happening. And it's not just rival fans. It goes much deeper than that, I think.
Okay. Well, we will move away from that subject.
Probably best.
And we will talk about the footy then, Sam. It was a good game of high intensity football, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. Yeah, it was. And we saw both sides of both teams. Sort of frailties and you know, sort of, would you say assets and positives? You know, it's like first half was very much Man City in control, strangling Liverpool as though we were a weaker team in the Premier League. I was watching that game thinking this is going to be a long season, and then obviously as we go into the second half, we completely take control. Whatever Klopp did and said, there's a few tweaks that we can get into that I think he did, and then we really came on. And I honestly believe this. My non-biased analysis is that we should have won that game of football yesterday. And when it went to pens, you just thought, Salah, that clearance off the line, we're going to lose this on pens. Mm. But it was such a good game. And I think the positive from it on social media has been, I've seen a lot of rival fans say, this is the benchmark. These two teams are far and away ahead of us. People like Mark Goldbridge, who's not a strong United fan, but he's honest, he'll say it as it is. Some other people who are quite outspoken on social media have said Liverpool and City have set the benchmark there, and it was good to see that.
And in a friendly as well. I mean, you know, and Ross, how are you ultimately feeling about us losing the contest?
I think it's always easy, isn't it, when you lose it and you just go, it's just a big 50p, I'm not really that arsed. You want to win it anyway.
Shiny dinner plate.
Yeah, but you want to win that contest, don't you? The psychological edge over City, you kind of think, you know, get one over them, you kind of want to do that. But I was gutted with the first half performance, and I think a bit like you, going, Christ, it's going to be fucking ages. But I took enough away from the second half to actually go, I'm all right with this, you know. And I think the bit I liked the most was the use of substitutions, so you could use six. And the fact that he got minutes for Chamberlain, Keita, Shaqiri, Lallana, all on there, I think he's more vitally important than winning that trophy and getting minutes under their belt is what I took out of it.
So, James, I'll take you back to the starting 11. Were you surprised at all with the starting 11? I mean, you know, Gomez starts with Van Dijk in the centre, doesn't he? We see Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson, Salah, Firmino and Origi over on that left. Was there anything there that did shock you?
The only surprise for me was that Matip didn't start. I'm a huge John Matip fan. I don't think he's done anything to lose that place in the starting 11. Yes, Joe Gomez is fantastic and he's a wonderful prospect, but he did make some mistakes yesterday as well. He did. I actually thought when he moved out to the right, I actually thought he was fantastic, actually. But Joel Matip, for me, apart from, I think, the Tottenham game back in February, I don't think has put a foot wrong. And again, comes on and scores for us yesterday. He's in the right place at the right time, which is exactly what I want from a, you know, 8 foot tall centre back. So that for me was the only sort of surprise. But just what you guys were saying, just I mean, hugely positive. Fitness wise, I thought we were fitter than Man City.
De Bruyne got a cramp at one point.
Yeah,
he only played 4 pre-season games, which when you look at it, was playing 6
they've,
or 7.
They've not played anywhere near enough pre-season games for me. I think that's a real fuck-up on their part. And I think that's why we came into the game more and more, because I think we're just a much fitter outfit than they are. But yeah, I mean, a fantastic contest. I mean, excellent. I mean, if you're the neutral watching that, I mean, it's absolutely fucking...
Well, normally those Community Shields are diabolical, aren't
they?
Well, Sam, take you back to the beginning. You know, obviously you mentioned the first half and City being on top and looking like they're in control of the game. Was it them being good? Was it Liverpool being poor? Or was it a bit of both?
I think a lot of it comes down to our team. Obviously, we didn't have Mane. Now, obviously, Origi's a good player. He's become a legend overnight, hasn't he? But he's not as natural on the left. And I think what City did well is they pushed up Walker really high, knowing that Origi's not someone who's going to abuse that space in the way Mane would. He doesn't go forward in the way Mane does. He stops, he turns, he twists. He might make a diagonal run. He's not a natural left-sided winger or wide forward. And I think because of that, Walker put himself 10 yards further up the pitch, which really stretched us. And that was where they were able to strangle us. They had Zinchenko and Walker on touchlines, and those fluid midfielders just literally ran us ragged. And the runs inside from Sterling and De Bruyne and Bernardo at times. I thought David Silva was brilliant first half. Obviously, he got the assist for the goal. I just thought tactically, they just really got it right. But what I really like from us is that we didn't play that well, but we still managed to defend well enough to go in 1-0 down. And you always felt, didn't you, towards the end of the first half, that we were coming back into the game. So I was pleased at half time that it was there's positive signs. We've had a couple of chances, even though we've been battered. So yeah, I was quite pleased going into the.
I missed the first 10 minutes as well, because where we were before kickoff was just on the side of the pitch, and our seat was miles away. So I got in just as Sane was going off, the exact same time as you. Yeah. I watched their goal on the television just outside our block. And as we walked in, Sane was going off. I've since seen highlights back, and obviously I know that Sane was good. But there was a couple of poor play from Joe Gomez in the first instance, wasn't he? Sane gets in because Sterling pinches the ball off Joe Gomez, doesn't he? Was that what that first period was like for us?
Yeah, I think so. It was oddly we played a high line, which got exposed like time and time again. You know, I thought we might change that at some point because City got onto it, certainly. You know, you said tactically, you have De Bruyne making deep runs and stuff, so they'd have, I don't know, Sterling on the last line, which where the line was. But there's someone running deep. You can't give people that space. And I was quite surprised that we persisted with that and carried on. But I think you might be nervous.
I think it was VAR as well, knowing that we've got that inch if we get our line right.
Joe Gomez, I think might have just been nervous for him, to be fair. He took too much time on the ball and Sterling nicked it off him. Just a bit of a wake-up call, I think. But on with James, like when he moved to right-back, I thought he was excellent. But I even thought he was good in the first half at centre-back. I think it was just that high line was like too much for him, too much for Van Dijk. And City, you know, they're blessed with bags of pace. They're always going to hurt you.
I thought that, like, after the first 20 minutes, I thought that we started to gain control in the game personally. And, I've seen so many people say online and stuff like that that, you know, it was a full first half, second half. But for me, we stopped them having loads and loads of opportunities. Obviously, Sterling has one, doesn't he, when he goes to, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we got I don't know what we did, but we seemed to nullify their midfield a little bit more. We seemed to understand where they were going, how they were going to try and move the ball forward. Thought Rodri was really good first half for them. Thought it was an interesting little battle, James, of goal kicks, the way that like Liverpool didn't want to overcommit and go and mark the centre back, but when they did commit, Rodri would have the ball and they'd play through us, and that's going to evolve as the season goes on with that rule change, isn't it?
I thought he ran Trent ragged at times as well. I thought that was really interesting. I thought Trent yesterday was quite poor for big parts of the game. I don't think he's had a particularly great pre-season. I thought Henderson grew into the game really well as well. I think that was a real key for me. Was after sort of 20 minutes, I thought he really started to sort of figure out the Man City formation and figure out exactly what they were trying to do and sort of marshal it a bit more and be a bit more composed. Actually, I thought that really made a huge difference for me.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, one of the things that Liverpool did is we did trouble them from set pieces. Mm. I mean, they ultimately get their goal from a set piece against us, thinking about it. But City, time and time again, we troubled them from set pieces. Is that one of their sort of Achilles heels, maybe?
Possibly. It's interesting. It's one of the things that you might see a lot more this season. Obviously, Laporte, a very good defender, and they will assume he'll add to their presence back there. But I think Kompany was such, he was a bit like our Van Dijk in terms of headhunting. He won everything, didn't he? So I'll be interested to see how that works this season, because if they've got to play a lot of games of football with Otamendi and Stones, and obviously Laporte is going to play as well, but and maybe Fernandinho at centre half at times, I think they're going to be weak because their team is fundamentally quite small. I know Rodri's, he's quite tall, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
You wouldn't say, oh yeah, he's known across Europe for being a commanding header of the ball. He's very much a good football player with his feet, isn't he? So I think that it's something that I think a lot of teams, not just Liverpool, can take into games against City. You've got to use your set pieces, get your delivery right. I actually think first half, we threatened, but I think the delivery wasn't great. I think it got much better in the second half. I think Trent, to add to his bad day, I think he just stopped taking them, really, because I think Henderson takes the
took
one.
A couple of corners as well.
Yeah, good ones, yeah. Shaqiri took a couple at the end, didn't he? But Henderson took the one, didn't he, that we scored. He whips it in. It's a really good ball. Flicks off to this defender's head and comes to it. But yeah, I actually think for us, we're good. And I saw Pep Linders say something. I watched a video on YouTube where he's going through there, and he was saying how good Liverpool are in the second phase of set pieces. Proved again, we scored in the second phase. And I think a combination of us being really strong on the second phase of set pieces and City being not a big side, I think was always going to be an interesting
contest. Am I right in saying that there's a rule change so that attacking players in the Premier League aren't going to be allowed in walls?
If there's three or more,
you've got to be a metre away. So you've got to be. You can stand in the wall, but you've got to be, I think it's a metre. So basically what they're doing is you stand a metre further forward. I first saw it in the Premier League Cup when West Ham played City, and the City players were standing in West Ham's wall in the same place they normally would, but a metre further forward. So they're fundamentally still blocking the goalkeeper, but they're just a metre closer. So you can't
put a hole in the wall, essentially? Is that
no, so they can still put players behind if you wanted to, but they're not really doing that. So City players will just, at the end of the wall, they were standing a metre further forward. So they're still blocking the goalkeeper, but they're not allowed to be in the wall. So it's...
Well, that's interesting.
How will that change things, you reckon?
Don't know.
Well, I guess you can't hold off a defender, can you? You can't. Yeah. You know, if you're tight to a defender at the edge of the wall, I mean, you can stop them, can't you? I guess.
Yeah, you can impede them jumping and stuff.
You can impede them, can't you?
I'm interested to see how that will play out, because every time there is a rule change, teams will look to gain something from it, won't they? And I wonder who's going to do that and who's going to get the first goal from something like that. It'd be interesting to see.
Did you see? Burnley, sorry, yeah. Did you see? Sorry, Chris, to interrupt. Did you see in the game, there was a moment where we were right on top. I think it was 1-1. And we had the ball. I think it hit the ref. And then we carried on and we still had the ball. Oh, and the ref stopped the game.
Yeah, that's a new one.
But that's wrong. The new rule says you only do a drop ball if it changes the possession. I've read all these rules. Like,
all right, John Smith. Fucking hell. No, like, you know what I mean?
But we were right on top.
This is great, don't
you? Yeah, yeah, this little notebook. Hang on a minute, lads.
Actually.
It's an education.
Seriously, because I saw one of the old... Who's in charge? Keith Hackett is... Well, I don't know if he's in charge. He's got a Twitter account. He posts all the stuff, so I follow him. And he put it on. He said, if the ball touches the ref...
Is he in your ref's list on Twitter?
Yeah, mate, in that group. It's in that WhatsApp group as well, yeah.
So that shouldn't have been pulled back.
No, I think that was a mistake, because we had the ball, it hit him, it was scrambled, and we carried on. We were right on their back line.
Yeah.
And everyone, we were all, you must have been thinking the same, what's going on? Yeah, so apparently it's only if the ball changes possession, it's a drop ball then, because it's not fair.
And it's uncontested drop ball.
Which is what happened.
Well, the commentators got that wrong as well then, because they said that the new rule is if it touches the referee, it's a drop ball.
Well, that's not what I read.
Well, if you're a commentator and you're working for BT or whatever it was, Sam's starting up a new business where he will literally be in your ear on a little radio mic if you need, with updates from the ground in his little notebook. He'll offer this, of course, for a fee. His match ticket probably and his travel on the coast.
RedmenTV.com.
Ross, Mo Salah, I thought he had a good game. Loads of people thought he didn't. But one thing he was is a thorn in the side to Zinchenko.
Yeah, and I said to Tom before, that's kind of what I wanted to kind of see from him. You think he only played not even a full game against Lyon and stuff, and he's had a long summer, a long season. It's just good to see him. He's match fit, and that's all I wanted from him. You know, I want him to take those chances. I want him to have the confidence to shoot. Yeah, it's frustrating that he didn't score. It's frustrating that we didn't win. But he's in the right positions. He's hungry. He's got the desire to carry on. That's fine by me. Go and take that into Norwich, because if he played like he did again yesterday, like Norwich, he'll get a hat trick.
He's going to score a bucket load this season. Wow. There's absolutely no doubt about it. He looks on fire. He really does. He fucking hates passing though, doesn't he?
Yeah. He fucking hates a pass.
But would you not rather? Goodness me. Okay, yeah, it's some decision. So you have to pass. Like, but be hungry and take the shot.
I'm not taking nothing away from that. Like, we strikers that have a bit of arrogance about them and a bit of like, no, I'll do this myself. Fuck all of you. I'm all about that. But by God, there was a couple of times yesterday. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it'll come. It's, you know, it's not even the start of the season.
It started early for Salah as well, didn't it? He gets that ball. I think it's still 0-0 at the time. And he opens his body up, doesn't he, and tries to hit it near post again, which he did a lot.
I did it two or three times.
And that was a sign of things to come for Mo because, you know, I think he hits the post twice, doesn't he, at stages during the game. But for me, and I said this to the lads after the game last night, it didn't feel like the Salah that we saw last season. It felt like the Salah that we saw the season before, like that real ball-greedy attacking players from wide with the ball at his feet, looking to get those shots on.
Egan,
it was probably like, people forget, it's probably a month or two in before he started slotting every time he got the ball. I'm looking forward to seeing him play like that because that's a Mo Salah who's played against an underrated defence because I think we always talk about Man City with the ball at their feet, but defensively they're brilliant. Now the four players at the back might not be great, but they're a unit, they're an 11-player defence at times, aren't they? And I think they're one of the best in the world because it's so difficult to break them down, it's so hard to play through them. And so when Mo Salah's doing that, and he's not got Mane stretching the defence on the other side, when I think Kyle Walker was comfortable, as you mentioned before, with Origi, that's harder because you can roll a centre-half over knowing that the ball's not going to go out and Origi's not going to beat you, whereas if Mane's over there, I think the right-back and the other centre-back have to respect that Mane's over there. So for me, I thought Salah was absolutely superb. So let's talk about the goal then that we conceded first. They played that really well. I think Liverpool have played a high line, Sam, against free kicks like that for a year now, probably a little bit longer. This is the first time it's really been exploited by two runners from deep who were miles onside. Liverpool did play the offside, didn't they? And was it Zinchenko and somebody else, was it, that got
double,
over?
Was it double? The double up on the right-hand side? Was it Zinchenko and Silva? Because he wins it, Zinchenko, doesn't he, and then plays in and then Silva flicks on, so it might have been one of Silva, yeah, but I saw that straight away, the double up. Man City, that's where Man City are very good at, though. They did little free kicks like that. They scored loads last season where, notice they didn't just whip the ball in, did they? They passed a few, knowing that our defence would do something. They've obviously analysed what we do when the ball's first played, and then obviously it shifted them right across. I thought it was a brilliant goal, I have to admit. It was very well worked. But we've been done a couple of times, like that. Leicester.
West Ham and Leicester exploiters, yeah.
I think, but you've got to be really good at it, and it's got to be something that you practice. So it's something maybe we've got to look out for this season, where teams think, well, the offside rule's going to be hard this year with VAR coming in. So maybe they need to use the deep runners, and it's something that we've got to look at because Man City have got the best deep runners in the league, as much as I hate to say it, and they used it well yesterday, and it was a good goal. And
unfortunately, it's Sterling. Like, yeah. Was it good, James?
It was
him that got the goal. Is it better in a friendly, or is that him now?
I'm not honest. I'm not. I couldn't care less who scored. We switch off, and that second phase, you can't be letting them get a little flick like that right into the six-yard. You can't be doing that. Sterling should get nowhere near that. And actually, Alisson should do better as well, if I'm being brutally honest. I mean, you know, it's very hard to criticise, you know, someone who you know.
So beautiful.
He's so beautiful, yeah. But yeah, that goal shouldn't happen from our point of view. It's a great bit of build up. It's a lovely way of working a free kick, but we shouldn't be conceding that.
Ross, I didn't like that Sterling scored. Now, Paul, I think when we were talking after the match and on our way down Wembley Way, was like, I'd rather him do it in a friendly. But I just kind of feel like he's finally got rid of those demons and that we might see the real Raheem Sterling every time he plays. Where do you sit?
I'm not arsed that it was him. I was more pissed off with the goal the way that we played, to be honest. And the fact I was frustrated that it went through Alisson's legs and then he made another three attempts to get the ball and missed.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you
everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And then Sterling scuffed his shot as well in the first place. That was frustrating. I'm not bothered that it's him, but I get your point. I think that might give him confidence going into future Liverpool games. I don't think he'll play at Anfield because he always has a nightmare there, but I think he's broke that hoodoo, hasn't he? In his mind, have gone actually have scored against them now, so why can't I go and do it again? That's why it's a bad thing.
And little shout out, I mean, Raheem Sterling gets so much stick up and down the country, mainly from journalists and stuff like that. But Sam, we saw what he was doing and taking the time to sign autographs and take photos with Liverpool fans, who he's clearly a role model for. It's absolutely brilliant from Sterling, isn't it?
Yeah, I almost feel he's got a split personality, Sterling. I think he's learning as he's getting older, but. Like he's still got these elements of stupidity in him, like for instance the plane chance and all that. But I do feel he's learning as a human, and we've got to remember when we're judging these footballers who don't really grow up; they just grow up in football academies. I do think he's a better man now than he was a couple of years ago, and I think anything that he's doing like that is positive. Even like I hate to say it, when he gave all those tickets to the fans. In London, when his old school was it when the FA Cup final, you can't knock the things he's doing because it's easy not to. And yeah, when it went off the pitch, he's becoming a bit of a little legend. And I think he's growing, but he's still a tit. Still Raheem Sterling.
He did so well then, Sam.
I know, but he's still Sterling, isn't
absolutely,
he? You know,
absolutely still right. Man.
I respect everything that he does off the pitch. I respect what he does on the pitch because I think he's a fantastic footballer as well, by the way. But that ain't going to stop me booing him because I think that we can have a negative impact on his game if we boo him. And then that's all the boo is in this instance. It's not like the one we were talking about earlier where there's a deeper meaning to it. It's to make sure that he fluffs his lines every time he gets in front of Alisson, which, by the way, he did one time.
he did. He absolutely fucking bottled that. He's got a one-on-one and he just loses his head.
The problem I think he's got is he thinks he's got Guardiola running alongside him because Kyle Walker, to me, looks like Guardiola all of a sudden now. It's ridiculous. Right? When did he lose his hair and get that tanned? And he's bombing to one side. And Alisson's spoken about this in interviews over the years, is how he waits for them to touch the ball before he goes off his line. And it sounds like clever, because they're obviously in stride. Now, when Sterling's in stride, he's just touched the ball, that's when you go. You're not giving them an opportunity to turn you one way or the other. That's what Alisson does brilliantly. Sterling does fluff his lines a little bit, but obviously gets the goal that gets them into the penalty shootout. We go into the second half. I think Liverpool fans are probably at this point thinking, we can get something out of the game. We don't want a heavy defeat, James, certainly. But we come out second half and we dominate. I mean, first half, let me get the possession stats here. Because we're all about the possession stats because they don't really mean much. But they had 59% possession in the first half. We had 64% of the ball in the second half. Now, I look at these most weeks over on the website and I can't remember... That certainly last year we didn't have the most possession against City. The year before, I don't think we did. This is the first time over the course of a 90-minute game we've had more possession against Manchester City, and that does bode well because we stopped them playing football that second half.
Yeah, massively. We finished the first half really strong as well. Like it was one of the, I was watching it at home. It was one of those where I didn't want the whistle to blow because I was like, another 5 minutes and we're going to score here. And yet, like you say, we come out the second half absolutely out of the traps. Man City cannot handle us when we're like that. Nobody can handle us when we play like that. Why we don't do it from the off yesterday is absolutely beyond me. But yeah, we completely shut them down. I think our midfield is, I think that's our midfield that really sort of comes into its own in the second half. I think Wijnaldum picks his game up a bit as well. I think, I think it was everything that was missing from the first half that suddenly becomes apparent in the second.
And listen, Van Dijk has one off the bar. We've mentioned Mo has a couple off the post. Mo has one cleared off the line by Guardiola himself again.
That's phenomenal, by the way.
It's unbelievable defending.
That clearance is ridiculous.
I've no idea how he does it still.
You've got to credit him, haven't you?
Yeah, massively, mate. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But we could have been 4-5-1 up by the end of the 90 minutes.
Easy. I mean, I still haven't seen the bar and down effort back. It's the only moment
it goes in, but it obviously the ball doesn't cross the line.
Yeah. I've seen the VAR bit, so the goal line, but I've not seen the actual rerun of the actual effort. Was it a header? Was it Van Dijk?
No, Van Dijk, he catches it on the way up. It's not quite a half volley. It's a volley, I suppose.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that didn't go in. And Origi, the thing is, last year Origi would have been there and ended that. Origi's like, yes! And we were all like, yes! And then the ref was just like, no, it didn't go in. And like I say, it was a shame, actually, that everyone just thought it was in. And I think a few of our lads were like, it's a goal, and you stop. But yeah, I couldn't believe it. When it was 0-0, when it was 1-0 still to them, me and the lads were like, have we not scored it? The post twice, the crossbar, Bravo's been brilliant. He comes off his line faster than anyone, by the way. Yeah, I think he's probably quicker than Alisson. He's rapid off his line. He was all over our players. And then when we got the goal, we all just went, here we go, didn't we? And I can't believe we still didn't win.
I thought that goal was Origi. I mean, I shouted Origi's name a lot during myself. I was at the point where his name went on the board. I went, oh, Lord, Joe Martin. I had no clue it was Martin, none whatsoever. But that goal, again, it comes from a set piece again. We mentioned it before, Ross Henderson, who whips the ball in. Van Dijk with a really clever ball back across, and Matip's the man there again, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't think it's a case of he aimed for someone. I think he's just putting it in the right area and hoping that Joel Matip will get in there. Again, exposing the height thing of, you know, an 8-foot Joel Matip. I think if he just aim anywhere near him, he'll get something on it. And I think it's good for Joel Matip as well. I think he kind of needs to add goals to his game. If you're going to pick something at him, you know, he's been magnificent for the past, 8 months probably. Go and get some confidence, get, you know, be in the right place and get some goals behind him.
What did anyone make of the substitutions Klopp made? I mean, he brings Keita on, doesn't he? He brings Oxlade-Chamberlain on. In fact, let's go through it in order. First one, he moves Wijnaldum into the six and takes Fabinho off and puts Keita on, doesn't he? That substitution, for me, James, really worked.
Yeah, massively. I think it's as much about moving Wijnaldum as it is bringing Keita on. I think that trio now works really, really well. I think that's the trio for me that will be starting most.
Really? Wijnaldum in the six?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. I think he plays really well there. I think he plays really well there, but I think it's also an option against a team that plays a high line, against a team like Manchester City, where you need that little bit more composure. I think that's exactly the lineup that we'll have. It's not a criticism with the substitutions, but I looked at the bench yesterday and I don't know. I want a massive season from Naby Keita. That's a given. I want Naby Keita to really, really step on this season. I thought he did all right yesterday, actually.
Could have scored.
He could have scored, yeah.
He should have scored, yeah.
Well, could have, should have. But I want a really big season from him. I was disappointed. Sorry to get into sort of the squad stuff. Where was Ryan Brewster yesterday? Why was he not?
He was on the bench, wasn't he?
No.
Wasn't he?
The only players were Mignolet and Lovren who didn't come on. Everybody else was used.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. I thought that was really odd.
Yeah, there was two centre halves, and then Matip and Lovren.
Matip and Lovren, yeah. And then Mignolet, Lallana,
Shaqiri.
And Shaqiri. I just thought that was really odd. I thought yesterday was crying out for a player like Brewster to come on.
Maybe it was just the level of opponent that we knew it was going to be an intense game. It's Liverpool City, maybe it was just like, it's not the right time to put the pressure on. I don't know.
Yeah. What did you think of Keita?
I thought he was really good. One of the things we were saying about Wijnaldum, where help Keita is, I think when we come off second half, I noticed that Wijnaldum was slotting in left a little bit more, which allowed Robertson to push up and Origi to come centre. Henderson was bombing in on the right-hand side, freeing up Salah. All that was brilliant. And when he brought Keita on, I think whatever the sort of dynamics were between the three of them, City, if they were getting any sort of idea of what we were doing with that Henderson bomber through, leaving Salah free and Ronaldo slotting left, pushing Robertson up. It changed it again. And I noticed Keita was picking up the ball a lot more where Rodri... Did Rodri play the 90?
I don't think he played the full 90. I know Gundogan gets brought on, doesn't he, because, to help out?
Yeah, because in that... Well, I think that might... I don't know if it was before or after, but Keita just... Whatever we did differently in terms of tactically with that three... Keita just found himself free all the time in front
of
their back four.
He had loads of time.
And that was interesting because whatever we did differently pulled their midfield in different directions. And that one little change from Klopp was really good because I thought, like you say, Keita should score, really. He'll say that himself probably when he picks up the ball. And that wouldn't have happened pre that sub for one of our other midfielders because the change, it must have been, I don't know if it was a pivot or whatever, but he found himself free a lot more.
I loved it. I mean, one of the things that disappointed me throughout the game was, you know, first half, I didn't think Trent and Robertson attacked very well. And listen, there's reasons for that. I think when you're going up against Sane to begin with and Bernardo and Sterling and all these lads, you don't want to just throw caution to the wind and push your fullbacks up. But Gomez, I thought, did a really good job of that when he came on. But what I found interesting is when we brought Keita on, Ross, we actually started to use that middle of the pitch, like Sam's saying. It wasn't overly reliant on wing play. There was space in the middle for Keita to run into, and he was there to exploit it. And that's got to be, for me, a marker down for him. That looked like Naby Keita just before he got injured, the Naby Keita that we saw at the back end of last season. As James says, it's got to be a big season for Keita, but he can be a massive player for us if he's going to perform like that every week.
Yeah, I think it was the same for all the substitutions. They're all fighting for a place, aren't they? You know, I mentioned before it was good for them to get minutes and confidence under the belt, but I think the midfield in the first half, I don't think it was great at all. So to have that energy burst, which he brings, you know, I think he was only going to shine, you know, because I don't think Henderson, Genie was great. Genie had one of them games where he kind of goes missing, doesn't he? And it wasn't great, but, you know, you come up against a decent midfield. Whereas I don't think, you know, we were on the front foot at that point when Naby came on and we were on the attack in City were kind of, like, as you mentioned, all over the place, and he exposed that space. And for him to go on and just kind of run the show, I kind of thought that's what I wanted to see from him. And I'm with you. I think he might start on Friday. And I think that's what some of the substitutions were. So Matip didn't start, but I think he'll start on Friday. I think it's about using the squad. And, you know, I don't think Klopp was that arsed about it, to be honest. It'd be the Community Shield, and he's able to use his team. I think that's what we need to do.
It is interesting because the squad things I find interesting because obviously we've got a Friday game, we've got a midweek game, Wednesday, I think, is the Super Cup.
Yeah.
And then we play Saturday against Southampton away. Wednesday, Saturday, that's a tough ask, especially at this early stage of the season. So you can see that he's probably thinking about rotating. But it was great for me, James, to see such a high-intensity game like we've spoken about before, but also that you can make five substitutions and there was no real drop-off. I mean, Ox comes on, Lallana comes on, Shaqiri comes on, Salah's moved into the nine, and we just continued like before. Sometimes you can make a host of subs and the game goes flat. It wasn't the case this time.
No, I feel like everybody knows exactly what their job is when they come on. I don't feel like there's any confusion. I feel like we can pretty much swap like for like. I still don't feel like we've got a massive game changer. Naby Keita possibly. But yeah, I think it bodes really well. I think it's all really, really positive going forward. I'm with you. I expect that to be the lineup on Friday. Matip comes in. I think Keita starts. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain is still a way off. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a couple of months until we see the real Oxlade-Chamberlain.
But, that's right.
But I think it bodes really well. But we need Sadio Mane.
Yeah,
I mean, let's make no. I mean, he'd have run that show yesterday. We really are crying out for him back.
No, I agree with that. I think Sadio was a massive miss, and it was interesting, Sam, to see Oxlade-Chamberlain come on that left hand side because while we've been going through pre-season, when we've had short numbers, Ox has been playing the right. Wijnaldum's been playing the left, but Ox on that left hand side, I thought he did well again.
Yeah, he comes on. It was almost role reversal between the teams, didn't it? Our subs had much bigger impact than theirs, really, didn't he? And the energy he brought, he nips the ball and Salah nearly scores again. I thought he was really energetic. There's one thing about Ox you get, isn't it? You get bundles of energy. He's always up for it. He doesn't shy out of things like challenges and he'll always try and play a pass. He's very brave, which obviously Klopp loves using that word, doesn't he? It'd be interesting to see, actually, because I'm not sure Divock starts on the left. I'm still not 100%. I think he's a great option off the bench. I think he's good down the middle. But I'm not sure I'm on that left. And before we get Mane back, maybe for the Super Cup or the Southampton game, be interesting to see if Klopp puts Keita or Ox on the left, or whether he plays as Wijnaldum on the left. Or it's going to be interesting to see how he lines up there.
I'm with you. I think Origi's a great impact player, and I think that's a very, you know, when people say that, I think some people think, oh, you know, that means he's not a good starter. That's fine. I think there have been players throughout their career, Solskjaer's one, obviously, Fairclough, who are just really good off the bench. They understand what's happening in the game of football, and they're able to affect that game of football when they come off the bench. Origi, I feel, Ross, is only used on that left because he's quick.
Yeah.
I don't think his skill set lends himself to playing over on the wing. I just think he's a fast lad, and we trouble defenders by putting up against him. But when it's Walker, who's probably faster than Origi, I don't think you're ever really going to trouble him.
No, I found myself quite frustrated with him yesterday, to be honest. I think you made a point before of, like, he runs into the space and he gets the ball and he gets in the right position. But as soon as he's out on the left wing, he does a couple of step overs, and it's the end product for me of going, you know. But you're comparing him to Marnie, aren't you? Who just, like, you'll just dance past people and then put it in the back of the net. He's never going to do that because that's not what he does. But then you think of all the times that he's come on and he scored a goal, and you're right, he's an impact player. That's not a criticism, but it's a concern. I think you said before, of not having a Brewster or someone who could probably do that role a bit better, I think. And then you've got Origi to look at the bench. You've got actually 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. You know, he can cause problems when people are tired and stuff. And
he's desperate to cut inside all the time, I feel.
He scored goals from there before, like, last season. But when you're playing Man City or one of the top five teams, I don't think he's the player that you'd want in there. But I think we're crying out for someone still, in my opinion, to, in the transfer market, and go, actually, I'm going to bring you on and have the same level as Man City, or play a Brewster, for example.
I think it's Brewster. I think long term, I think that's the plan. I think that's why we haven't spent 40, 50, 60 million on a forward or a young forward. I think because Brewster, I think, is the one that, going forward, I think he is that option.
Are you thinking like how United have used Rashford the last couple of years? Absolutely. Use him on that wing until he's good enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's not fit enough, is he? Yeah, because Klopp said, didn't
he's not strong enough.
He's hit that level. Remember, he said in pre-season, didn't he? He hit a point where he could see he'd been out for a year. I remember watching that somewhere, so maybe he's just not quite
there yet. Penalties then?
Fucking hell.
Four really good pens from Liverpool, to be fair. Four really good pens from City. Zinchenko's was probably the one that Alisson could have saved.
Yeah,
he should save that.
Yeah. And then Wijnaldum's. Was there a fume about Wijnaldum's pen on Twitter? Of course there was.
He just had not had a great game all round, and it was kind of when he stepped up, you kind of went, oh no, don't put the cherry on the top.
We all sang his name. The only player in the penalty zone's name gets sung, and he missed.
Oh, fucking hell.
What I loved about the penalties, because where I was sat was really, really close to the Man City fans, is we scored. Shaqiri gets the opener, doesn't he? Then who steps up for them first? I've forgotten.
It was Gundogan.
Gundogan.
German matey.
Oh yeah. of course. They put a German on to take the penalty.
He hits it there. You look at those pens. I said to the last week, he whips this, and he whips it well. I don't think he saves it if he dives that way, by the way, but he always whips them. And then obviously Alisson went the other way, didn't he?
But it was a loud boo, and a real good boo as well. ones that were allowed to do. And then City were like, oh, we can do this. Because I was sat with them, and they were so quiet for our first pen. And our second pen, who was our second pen, actually? Was it
Gini?
It was Gini. Yeah. And he gets the boo. He gets Man City's boo. And I was like, you don't deserve to be here as fans. Because you didn't boo the first pen. You realised we were going to boo and went, oh, we'll boo as well then.
And it's like a 5 out of 10 boo.
It was pathetic. Yeah.
You know, they're not even fully committed to the boo.
You've got a boo, you know what I mean? And mean it, don't just copy us because we booed. You bad blitz.
Plastic flags.
I fancied Alisson. I was sat with my wife and I was saying that Alisson's going to save one of these. I said, you fucking watch, you'll get his big hands to this. Hey, dude, let me down.
No. What did your wife say? You were wrong.
She's just in
your face.
She's just in love with him, so I'm watching Alisson. Just.
Oh, look at that dye. It was great. Yeah.
She's not arsed. It's facial hair.
Did you say Lallana was going to score a winner as well yesterday?
Yeah, I did. I thought I'd throw that out there. I thought I'd just put the line in the water and just see what happens.
Did you duck afterwards?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. If you mentioned Lallana on Twitter.
But Ali Dunk, it would have banged that.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah. Could you imagine? I thought Oxlade-Chamberlain's penalty was...
It was
quite special.
Yeah, bang.
So in the warm-ups, he was hitting them from 30 yards like he hit that penalty, and they were going top bin.
Seriously.
I mean, like, It's one thing where I normally sit in the cop, when you're watching the warm-ups, you don't really get an appreciation for how hard they twat the ball, honestly. And, like, this ball was going into the net, and I was like, I can't believe how hard these lads kick it. It's not like five-a-side with me and the lads.
Is it not Christmas?
It's not like our walking footy on a Wednesday night, you know, boys. It's a bit more special than that. I couldn't believe it. And he was, and his pen was a proper thunder bastard. It just went, boom!
It did. It just straight went, fuck in. Off.
There was a couple. Did Salah bang one as well? That was
Salah's was a good pen.
Yes. Another blast. Yeah, right in the
Salah's corner. Was right in the top bin, wasn't it?
But then, yeah, it was. And then City celebrated that so hard. And that made me happy. It made me realise that they struggled in that game. They celebrated it because they had to dig deep just to get in with a draw against us. And that, for me, I was buoyed. And I wasn't sticking around for the Surrey. And to be fair, City fans didn't either,
Did they not? Were they not asked?
No. They just, like, because we had to go back through a lounge to get our camera equipment so we could meet the lads outside to record and stuff. So when we walked back to the lounge, they were just doing a celebration and there was no one in the ground. And I was like, well, there was a few, but there wasn't like, there were, all the City fans weren't there. And I don't understand why you wouldn't be, because A, there's no Barneys with Liverpool fans on Wembley Way, and B, you're just going outside to queue up in a massive queue for the train station anyway.
It just shows more the fact that I think there was 70-odd thousand people. It wasn't full, was it? 70,000 people going back to the north in the main anyway. So just, I guess it just showed that's more the point. It's like we need to get out of here. But yeah, if you want to lose a game of footy, you want to be the better team and lose by one pen on penalty shootouts. It's the only way you can say, okay, there's literally, and if there's a way to lose, that's how to do it.
Yeah. It does. And so many people, James, were saying after the game that, and it's something Sam mentioned at the beginning, these are the two powerhouses of English football.
Make no mistake about it, Manchester City, you know, are the best team in the country. They're the team to beat, and they can't beat us over 90 minutes when, you know, we're arguably without one of our best forwards in Sadio Mane. I mean, give it its due, both teams are probably at 70%, you know, going into this. Neither of them are at their best. They've had an awful pre-season in terms of the amount of games they've had. But yeah, these are the two teams to beat. There's absolutely no question that we are. I mean, and that's reflected in, you know, on social media. I haven't seen a lot of Man City fans on social media giving it the big one. I really haven't, because I think at all, really, it's been other fans.
And United fans, yes.
Yeah, no, it has. Everton fans had a wonderful time last night. I didn't know they'd won a.
It's the last weekend of the season they can enjoy.
That makes sense. but yeah, it's the two teams to beat. It's reflected in the score. It's reflected in the way we performed second half. Roll on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, before that though, Ross, Jurgen Klopp makes our lads stand on the pitch and watch them lift the trophy, and I thought that was just genius.
Yeah, it's psychological boost, isn't it? Going like, and maybe not for the Community Shield, but you see them, they're winning shit. You've done this before, you know. We shouldn't really be stood here. We want to be up there where they are, and I think that's a stroke of genius, like you said.
Psychologically, I'm like, no. He's like, no. You just watch this. You watch them enjoy themselves, and you make sure that next time you're the ones up there. I just think it was brilliant.
I hope that was the reason.
And it's a level of respect for City as well. I think it's poor form if a team just walks off the pitch down the tunnel and doesn't like shake hands, because you can have a rivalry, and Klopp and Guardiola have got a rivalry, but the final whistle goes and they respect each other again. Mm. That rivalry is done with for a few months until they play again. That's the way the sport should be played for me, Sam.
Yeah, and I just went on a side note, like, we should have won that game by default. The fact that Pep and his chinos that he had on, by the way, put that out there. But yeah,
what did he look like?
Oh, mate.
What did he look like?
That to me said, if we don't win this, we're all right, because, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to meet me clobber on from last night, yeah. Fucking, do you know what I mean? Hell. Oh, I know.
It's like he had a mufti day, innit? Brought his quid in.
But yeah, I think the lucky thing for us is now that'll give us even more hunger next week when we play Chelsea. I think now making them watch that, they'll all want to get that next trophy, which then moves on and on and on. And when do we next play City? Cause
I've no idea.
It's autumn, isn't it? It's autumn, and then right at the end of the year. I don't think it's Christmas time. I think it's soon, isn't it? And it's at Anfield first, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think now, obviously, even that loss on pens, we'll be going into that game with a real sort of, we need to get one back on them. You know, there'll be a big emphasis on that now again.
Is it first blood drawn?
No, no way.
No.
We've come away from that 100% more positive than they have. Unless they're like, oh, we're at S70, but it would take an idiot to look. I mean, Rio Ferdinand apparently was on BT saying, oh, giving it big licks about how they've gotten this player out, and so on and so forth. And I just thought, watch the game and try, stop giving excuses and just say, look, two brilliant teams and we were the better side. We just, you know, one cleared off the line. That's the difference.
Again. Same old story. Oh, well, maybe it'll change as the season goes on. Well, there you go. Then that's been the final word. It's the first final word on YouTube. This is something that we're going to trial. If you've enjoyed it, like the video, subscribe to the Red Men TV. Don't forget to check out James on Twitter. The James Sutton.
The James Sutton.
What was yours again?
One SGW.
Are you allowed?
I love that you've got... Is that like CR7? Is that like the Cristiano?
Yeah, no.
Is it because you were a teacher?
No, yeah, that's why it's blocked. But because I used to be in music industry, I was DJing years ago. It was DJ that, yeah. Sam Walker. So then when I decided not to go there, that alias, I put one because there wasn't a Mister. So on Instagram, Mister.
Nice.
So then I thought I need to mix it up because there's also a gangster called Sam Walker, which isn't very nice. So I thought one SGW. So I am not in jail. I'm sure he's a lovely lad. But Sam Walker, can you find him? But yeah, so... Just saying, like that's why I changed it, just because there's a bit of disparity there.
So you've got your Instagram out there, we've got your Twitter, you've got to promote your Facebook. don't have Facey, mate,
sorry.
Sam. And of course, check out Ross, he runs the Red Men TV socials, you know where he is, it's RossEC89 on Twitter. As I say, like the video, subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Ta-ra.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.